the end. Thanks, Lynn. And Gemma Cranston now from the Cambridge Institute for Sustainability Leadership. Well, I think talk on a theme that's quite nicely connected to the previous talk.
Absolutely. So thanks very much, and fantastic talk from Lynn as well. I've got lots to follow up with you as well, Lynn, so that's great. So my name's Gemma. It's a real pleasure to be here this afternoon. In the 15 minutes, I thought for some of you who might not know what this term natural capital means, I work in the Natural Capital Leaders Platform, I thought it might be worth just reflecting what I actually am referring to. I then wanted to talk about, well, what does this actually mean for the private sector, and how can we start to encourage them to think differently so that we can actually instigate some of the change that we know needs to happen, given some of the shifting and difficult challenges that we're seeing across the globe. So the Natural Capital Leaders Platform, I feel like we're going to show lots of logos of corporates. some of the same, of course. So what we tend to do is we basically bring together companies, all of whom have an interest in natural capital, and recognise there are risks and opportunities from understanding natural capital in their supply chains and in their operations. And they're not necessarily always brought around a particular commodity or a particular region. It can be around a particular topic like metrics or natural capital valuation. So that's why there are a few there who might seem a little bit in conflict with one another. We want to encourage that challenge. So, natural capital, well, what does this actually mean, and is this a helpful term to make natural resources accessible for business? So essentially what we mean by natural capital is it's an economic metaphor that represents limited stocks of natural resources, the non-renewable ones, and the limited capacity of ecosystems to generate benefits for human well-being. And I really like this little picture because it's essentially, I think it's a strangle of fig trees that have interwoven. And you can see directly the benefit of these school children walking across that as a bridge. Very much environmental infrastructure at its best. Now the problem we have with natural capital is the dependencies are very clear for those who were directly involved with hunter and gathering. So here we've got an example in Brazil, where we are absolutely completely interwoven with, you know, collecting berries and farming and so on. And this is where it becomes quite difficult for business, because those dependencies are becoming less and less clear as we move towards global industrialization, monocultures of agriculture and so on. It's becoming less difficult, and we're more and more separated from our natural environment. So we somehow need to start making the business case for integrating some of that thinking and understanding some of those both dependencies and impacts on natural capital so that companies can actually see successful business models for the future. And we've seen evidence of what we're calling natural capital valuation, where we're essentially trying to define, measure, and potentially even value our natural capital that we're using. And that's one way of trying to engage companies to see that direct implication on their bottom line. So the first point we tried to make at CISL is, you know, this is a big challenge, but there are lots of opportunities for business to actually work with nature and with natural capital. And I really like this quote from Jose Lopez of Nestle, who, although he's sort of the chief operating officer, he absolutely understands some of these massive challenges through their complexity of their value chains, but recognizing that it goes all the way from direct operations right down to the farm level as well. And they need to work together to resolve some of those big issues. So some of these challenges, and trying to, again, use some nice language and pretty graphics that the corporate sector tend to like. giving some slightly alarming figures and scary facts. So I don't know if anyone's familiar with the Living Planet Index. Well, that showed in the latest WWF Living Planet report that half of our populations of mammals, fish, birds, reptiles and amphibians have actually been lost looking back to 1970. And that has a massive implication for business, as Lynn's already introduced. Actually, what we're seeing is the economic cost of that degradation is up to 7.5% of global GDP. So we're not talking about small beer here. Water, 68% of the global 500 companies have said they recognise that as being a substantive risk for their businesses. And soil as well, fundamental, massive issues for business. If you haven't got any soil, you haven't got any crops, your supply chains potentially are going to fall apart. So this is some of the challenges that companies are starting to recognise. But we don't want to be all doom and gloom. We also want to show that there are some opportunities that can be grasped, and that comes in the form of decreased costs, increasing risks, reducing risks, enhancing reputations, and hopefully eventually creating some kind of revenue generation. And that can be throughout value chains, throughout operations, from the big corporate level all the way down to the farm. So what we really need to do is encourage these guys to start to think differently and start to build this into the business case and into some of the mainstream thinking of a corporate individual. And a lot of the KPIs and indicators that we're using are all around, you know, how much profit are you making, how big is your company, are you able to achieve growth, are you keeping your shareholders and dividends ticking along nicely. So what we want to be able to show is that actually, if you want to continue that pathway, that trajectory, you need to start thinking about natural capital and those resources that you depend on and you're impacting. And the way to do that is to actually start making some decent investments, recognizing that if you manage your natural capital resources in your supply chain, you're going to have a really sustainable business growth over the long term. Now the problem is, at the moment, is the sort of driver behind why companies would do this tends to be through reputational gains and benefits. They have these lovely little corporate social responsibility stories that you might be familiar with, that people come to conferences and you know roll out the same story about bees in California that have been imported so that their almond groves are going to be pollinated. Fabulous, lovely little examples, but absolutely not mainstream. That'll just be the head of sustainability that's talking about it. And we want to try and shift the game so that this becomes integral to the business decision-making process. So we're trying to push the boundary from reputational gains through to something more mainstream, through to operations, through to finance. And the way we think that can be enabled is by creating and building a body of evidence that actually recognises that little example of bees for almond groves in California isn't just for CSR. It's actually providing you some kind of financial return, commercial benefit. So there is a logic that perhaps you haven't been able to see yet in making some kind of investment. So start to use that mainstream language and mainstream business thinking. So where do you start? And this is a big, nasty, scary-looking diagram of a supply chain. And essentially, it's mapping some of the large externalities that you've got in the value chain. But don't worry about the detail. My point is this big red circle, which is most of these issues, these impacts and dependencies happen at the beginning of that value chain, at the growing stage, at farm level. So that's where we need to start getting companies to focus their energies and their investments. If they fix some of those issues, then hopefully it will flow positively through the rest of the chain. So what is this case for investment? Well, we're trying to make the case. You invest in action, in interventions on natural capital. We believe you can generate commercial returns. You also get a double win in terms of positive public outcomes. So we're trying to shift away from this business as usual system that we live in, where you've got this, you know, soil degradation, fertility going down, downward productivity trends, which means people are starting to respond by throwing more fertilizer on the ground, which is costly and essentially is not solving the underlying problem, and it's potentially degrading natural capital. We need to stop doing that and think more long term and think about healthy landscapes and create healthy landscapes through a landscape approach, identifying the most important natural capital interventions and financing them, investing in them, securing natural capital and showing that that's actually generating some commercial return back into the business, which we hope would then show improved productivity trends. You've then lowered your costs, you've increased your profit, your revenue's going up, and potentially you're now seeing that as its own asset class. And then I mentioned the sort of win-win. There's also a social dimension to this as well, in terms of improving healthy livelihoods as well. It's not just these corporates that need this for their supply chains, it's also the local communities and those living in the areas that also need the clean drinking water, and they have want to create food for their own subsistence as well. So that's something really important to consider at the same time. So we're running this project called ALIGN, which stands for Action Linking Growth and Nature. And our hypothesis is that we should be able to demonstrate that returns can be generated from investments in natural capital. And we need to remember that we want to focus at that early stage of the supply chain, on the ground, what's actually happening. Recognizing that natural capital consists of the soil, the water, the biodiversity, and that they are actually all interconnected as well. So one intervention will have potentially a positive impact on one and a negative on the other. So we need to make sure we're getting the right balance in our interventions. And then starting to push these companies from what they're currently doing, their direct operations, recognizing efficiency gains that they can make in their factories with, energy-saving light bulbs or whatever it might be, very, very small wins, but great to talk about. Can we actually start to push them down, thinking about some of those indirect implications at the growing stage and taking them even further to the landscape at which raw materials are actually being sourced. And doing that as a collective. We don't have to do this as one individual company, but a lot of people will be sourcing from the same regions as well, so perhaps that investment model needs to shift as well, and maybe your business model might need to change too, to enable this kind of action on the ground. So really what I wanted to leave you with is, we think we are open for business. We think the private sector's got a huge opportunity here now to stop talking about commitments and actually start delivering on them, and recognising that the business case is very much there, but we just need to create some of that evidence that they can refer to, so that the heads of sustainabilities actually don't really need to be there anymore, because you've got your CFO, your CPO, your COO, your CEO, all absolutely understanding this and seeing this as a driver behind the success for their business. So hoping to shift business from awareness into true mainstream embedding of some of these natural capital issues. Look forward to the discussion.
Okay, thank you very much. So it's time for probably one question of directly to Gemma or two. One and then two if we have time.
Gemma, very nice presentation.
And remember to remind people who you are.
Oh, yes. My name is Lucas from Institute for Manufacturing. Very nice presentation. Just because I got an impression it's just linked to businesses which are agri-based businesses. But as we know, some other industry which is also not directly linked to agri-base, but their plants are near to agricultural field. And then these plants also uses lots of water, which has impact on not only the plant, but also on the agriculture area as well. Will you be incorporating these kind of companies in this project, or what are the things that you are trying to do in order to bring these companies as well?
Yeah. Shall I answer that one first? Yeah. That's a really, really great question. And I have to hold my hand up to saying we are very much focusing on the agri sector all the way through to retailers. But I don't see why we can't use any of this thinking for the oil and gas companies, the all sorts of different sectors who need to have that demonstration that actually there is value to doing something positive for the environment. And I know, so if we take the extractive sector, for example, everything's happening underground, and they don't necessarily view that huge, hundreds of thousands of hectares of space as an asset. And if they could actually start to recognise there's huge value in that, that I'm not, I'm not measuring, I'm not attributing, it doesn't show up in my P&L, but actually we're able to translate that into some kind of return, I think that would be a big game changer. But I think the quicker win is to do it with agribusinesses and then show the evidence for success.
Thank you. Is it a brief question from the back? Trump. Do you want to hold it over to the... Do you want to be first on the list for... Or second on the list for the... Okay.